just don't think it's right or fair to expect workers to go to work sick as a dog without being able to have a few days to recover.
Congresswoman Peltola is skeptical of a proposed deal to avert a rail strike. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, November 29th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a Dillingham Creek gets a new name after years of advocacy by local students.
Feels good because we worked on it for so long and it finally got changed, and we just feel relieved.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your new Affordable Care Act coverage options and opportunity for savings. You can call 211 or text GETCOVEREDAK to 898-211 to connect to a healthcare navigator. Enrollment is open now through January 15th. Call 211 today. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
The U.S. Senate this evening passed a bill to protect same-sex marriage with the support of both Alaska senators. Going into the chamber to vote, Senator Lisa Murkowski said the bill provides certainty to gay couples that their marriages will be recognized nationwide.
What we'll see today with hopefully passage of this is, again, that respect from one state to another.
Senator Dan Sullivan slipped into the chamber without stopping to talk to reporters. The bill passed with 61 votes, one more than needed. Murkowski and Sullivan were among 12 Republicans who voted yes. The Respect for Marriage bill says states can't, on the basis of race or gender, reject a valid marriage license issued in another state. To win over enough Republicans, it also says religious nonprofits can refuse to provide services to celebrate same-sex marriages. The bipartisan vote reflects how far the nation has moved in a few decades on this issue. The bill repeals the Defense of Marriage Act, a law that limited federal recognition of marriage to opposite-sex partners. It passed Congress by an overwhelming margin in 1996. The new bill, the Respect for Marriage Act, goes next to the House, where it's expected to pass easily. President Biden pressed congressional leaders today to pass a bill to avert a railroad strike, which he said could cripple the economy. The leadership of both parties agreed, but there are holdouts among the rank-and-file members, and Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola is one of them. Peltola says she can't vote for a bill that would end labor negotiations without addressing rail workers' need to have sick leave.
I just don't think it's right or fair to expect workers to go to work sick as a dog without being able to have a few days to recover.
Peltola spoke on NBC's Meet the Press Now. She won election twice this year with the endorsement of Alaska labor organizations, including the Alaska AFL-CIO. Working conditions for more than 100,000 freight rail workers have been subject to negotiations for months. Unless Congress imposes a settlement, a strike could begin December 9th. Peltola says workers don't just need paid sick leave, but a guarantee that they can take a sick day without being fired, especially with flu and respiratory viruses on the rise. Peltola, though, acknowledges a strike could cause catastrophic damage to the economy.
I think it could also cause a catastrophic damage to the nation's economy if we're expecting a whole sector of employees to go to work sick.
The House is expected to vote tomorrow on a bill to avert a rail strike by imposing the terms of a tentative deal that includes no sick leave. One year ago, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland issued a declaration to remove a slur against Indigenous women from place names on federal lands. Nearly 650 new names were finalized this fall, including one for a Dillingham Creek that bore the slur. But as KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, three elementary students in Dillingham had been pushing to change the creek's name long before the federal government started its process.
Alora Wassily, Trista Wassily, and Harmony Larson have worked to change the creek's name since 2021. That finally happened in September. In an interview shortly after the announcement, Alora said they had put a lot of effort into reaching that goal.
It feels good because we worked on it for so long and it finally got changed, and we just feel relieved. We felt accomplished.
They began advocating for the change when they were in fifth grade, after they had heard a local story about seven sisters who had lived along the creek, and how both the creek and a road of the same name were marked with the derogatory word.
And then we thought about it, and then we decided to change it, and then we talked to our teacher, Miss Jensen, when we were in fifth grade, and then we talked with Courtney Carty and Robin, and then we just started researching about other places, and then we started working on a presentation.
Now they're in seventh grade. The students have presented their research many times. They started with the Dillingham Parent Advisory Committee and the school board.
We were all really nervous our first time, and then after a while we got used to it and we just got normal about it.
Since then, they have brought their research to the Chulalong Tribal Council, the First Alaskans Institute Elders and Youth Conference, and the Bristol Bay Native Corporation. Robin Cheney helped the students prepare. She's the Federal Programs Coordinator for Dillingham City Schools and has been an adult advisor for the students.
Them standing behind their information was really powerful. They were part of educating people here, including myself. They received mostly positive feedback and support, and really their confidence grew because their facts were accurate, and it was an issue that obviously became really important, not just to us, but on a federal level, that Secretary Holland would take that up.
When U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Holland announced last year that the word would be removed from geographic features across the country, the students' work got more attention. And they had to shift their approach, taking their grassroots advocacy and fitting it into a political process.
Our process went from slow and steady to very, very rapid.
The students recommended renaming the creek a la Creek, and they received broad support from the community during a listening session last spring. But at the last minute, a Chulalong Tribal Council member suggested a different name, Amal Creek. Cheney said that was difficult.
It was surprising and upsetting, but they still achieved the goal, which was to remove a derogatory place name and replace it with a traditional name, a Yuchdu name that has positive connotations for a woman, and that happened.
The students are the latest in a long legacy of work to recenter Native place names in Bristol Bay. Francisca Damoski is the land manager for the Bristol Bay Native Corporation.
Hi, my name is Francisca Damoski. I am from Togiak but live here in Anchorage.
She oversees the Land Department's cultural heritage efforts, including the Bristol Bay Native Place Names Project. She says it's one of the ways the corporation celebrates and preserves that heritage.
Amal Creek translates to great-grandparent and is a Yuchtun word. And in this case, it references a group of sisters or great-grandmothers who, according to traditional stories, traveled to the area and settled near the creek.
Damoski says the Native Corporation supports the federal efforts to change the derogatory names of places across the country, including in Dillingham. They are now focused on the next steps to change the community's signs and replace them with the new name, Amal Creek. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
A fire burned down the only store in the western Alaska village of Stebbins this morning. Lydia Raymond Snowball is president of the Stebbins Community Association, the local tribal government. She says her daughter Gwen, who lives right next to the Anika Stebbins store, told her about the fire at around 6 a.m.
Looking at the stores, I mean, I grew up with it all my life, and so did practically everyone here. And it was our only store standing, and then now it's gone.
Raymond Snowball says a few homes near the store sustained minor damage to windows. She says she's grateful it was not a windy day in Stebbins, a Yupik community of roughly 630 people.
There was no wind at all, and then when it did catch wind, it was blowing towards the ocean, which is the west.
Governor Mike Dunleavy says the state's Emergency Operations Center is coordinating with the village for response. EOC spokesman Jeremy Zedek says the store was the main supplier of fuel in the village.
They don't have electrical fuel pumps at this time, but they are able to do gravity feed and still get fuel out of that facility.
Zidek says between 60 and 70 homes lost power during the fire, but Alaska Village Electric Cooperative officials have restored power to most of the homes. He says the store was insured and the community is using an old washateria as a temporary store. As of now, he says it's not known what caused the fire. Raymond Snowball says the fire is out, but the site of the store is still smoky, with only one of its walls still standing. She says she's hopeful that goods will still be able to be flown in from the local hub village of Unalakleet. Stebbins is about 116 miles southeast of Nome across the Norton Sound and was among many western Alaska villages that flooded due to the remnants of Typhoon Murbach in September. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the BLM considers allowing helicopter tours to a popular hot springs near Fairbanks.
You add the noise, you add the visual. It's all negative and it's all very impactful.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Recently elected Nikiski Republican Jesse Bjorkman has joined a bipartisan coalition of senators that will hold the majority in the Alaska State Senate this session. The coalition, announced at a press conference Friday, includes all 9 elected Democratic senators and 8 Republicans. 3 right-wing Republicans will make up the Senate minority. Kodiak Republican Senator Gary Stevens will serve as Senate president. Bjorkman says he was approached by Stevens the day after the election about joining the coalition.
By choosing to be in the majority, I can maximize benefit for Kenai Peninsula residents in the state legislature.
Bjorkman says the choice to join the coalition wasn't easy. He says he spent lots of time on the phone with other state senators talking about what this Senate majority might look like before making a decision. Ultimately, Bjorkman decided being a member of a dissident minority would reduce his impact in the Senate.
It would have been very easy to sit on the sidelines in a minority and throw rocks and say no to things. But ultimately, I don't think that's the work that folks on the Kenai Peninsula elected me to do.
He says incumbent Republicans had been discussing the possibility of a bipartisan majority for some time before the election. According to Bjorkman, that coalition formed as a result of policy disagreements between long-serving Republicans and 2 conservative senators, Mike Schauer of Wasilla and Shelley Hughes of Palmer.
It became very clear that you had a very large group of senators that were not willing to work with either of those 2 people.
Schauer and Hughes are among senators who voted against Republican-proposed state budgets in the past. Schauer, Hughes, and incumbent Senator Robert Myers of North Pole make up the new minority. The organizational makeup of the Alaska State House has yet to be determined. The state fire marshal's office is investigating the deaths of 2 people whose bodies were found in a North Pole workshop last week. A 3rd victim, who was in the shop, was hospitalized and is still being treated. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, first responders suspect carbon monoxide poisoning.
Autopsy results for the 2 who died are still pending, but North Star volunteer firefighters who responded to the November 23rd call say they observed signs of exposure to deadly carbon monoxide fumes. Alaska Department of Public Safety spokesperson Tim Despain says the firefighters and a state deputy fire marshal who later went to the residence on Mill Pond Road found a generator with an empty fuel tank in a shed attached to the workshop where the bodies were found.
All indications are that it was carbon monoxide poisoning.
Responders also noted that a wood stove in the shop was still warm. North Star volunteer fire chief Jeff Coons says it's possible the stove also produced carbon monoxide that accumulated inside the workshop.
Anything that produces a flame for heat has the potential to give off carbon monoxide. Anytime you have a heating device that's not burning completely, it has the potential to put off harmful carbon monoxide.
Kuhn says the victims likely weren't even aware of the deadly gas.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas, by the time you start feeling the effects, it could be too late.
The firefighters also found an unresponsive woman in the workshop who was transported to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital for treatment. Her current condition wasn't available Monday because DPS hasn't released the victims' names due to problems in notifying next of kin. Kuhn says it usually takes a while for victims to recover.
Carbon monoxide displaces oxygen in the blood and deprives the heart and brain and other vital organs of oxygen. And once you get it in your system, it takes a long time to get out of your system.
According to the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 400 Americans are killed by carbon monoxide poisoning annually, and it sends about 50,000 people to the emergency room every year. Kuhn recommends installing a carbon monoxide detector in homes and outbuildings where people live or work. The state fire marshal's office is still investigating last week's incident, but foul play is not suspected. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
A young climate activist born and raised in Ketchikan was one of two Alaskans named to Forbes' 30 Under 30 list this year. KRBD's Reagan Miller caught up with Kiara O'Brien about how growing up in Alaska inspired her to pursue a career focused on fighting climate change.
Kiara O'Brien has some advice for other young Alaskans looking to make a difference in their communities.
Find something you're passionate about and go for it.
O'Brien is a 24-year-old Harvard graduate and climate advocate. Her passion for clean energy landed her a spot on Forbes' 30 Under 30 energy list this year.
Climate and clean energy are near and dear to my heart, and I'm very excited to see the energy list for Forbes turning towards clean energy in the way that it has.
She says her childhood in Ketchikan led her to where she is today, working for a green energy developer called Total Energies as a public policy representative.
My childhood in Ketchikan really shaped what I'm doing today. Alaska is ground zero for climate change. So clean energy is the future for Alaska.
Her job means she works in Washington, D.C., keeping an eye on federal offshore wind and solar policy.
So I monitor federal public policy. So anything that's happening on the Hill, happening in the White House, that's of interest to us. And then I bring the findings back to the company and try to deduce what exactly that means for our business and our investment decisions.
She started two climate-focused nonprofits and worked on the federal auctions that won her company two major offshore wind farm leases worth nearly $1 billion.
My field is quite niche, offshore wind especially, in the U.S.
It's not O'Brien's first time making one of these lists. She made a different 30 Under 30 list in 2020.
I was on one a couple years ago, Green Biz. It's a very similar kind of thing. It's just specific to climate and clean energy, though.
But before Forbes and before Harvard, O'Brien was a student at Ketchikan High School.
I was captain of the varsity swim team while I was there. I was a class act mentor. I was in the band program, a handful of other things.
She also was a summer intern for Senator Dan Sullivan in 2016, the same year she graduated from Ketchikan High School. She went back to work for him in 2021 as a correspondence manager. At Harvard, O'Brien was the president emerita of the Young Republicans Club. She also founded the Young Conservatives for Carbon Dividends Club. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks with 400 guest rooms and 1,700 square feet of meeting space. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com. What if accessing your personal and family immunization records was as easy as checking your phone? The Docket app is a secure option that allows Alaskans to quickly access their immunization records. Need immunization records for school or travel? Docket makes it simple and is available for download from the App Store or Google Play Store. Learn more at vaccinationrecords.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Fairbanks area tourism operator proposes to set up a hot tub at Tolovana Hot Springs and take visitors there by helicopter. Borealis Base Camp has applied to the Bureau of Land Management for a permit to operate west of existing cabins and tubs long managed by another company, Tolovana Hot Springs Limited. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
There's a small public airstrip about a mile from Tolovana Hot Springs, but most people access the area by trail. the shortest of which is a hilly, windswept 10-mile route off the Elliott Highway. It's a wilderness trek not everyone is up for or capable of.
Our reasoning for doing this is that we received requests both from our guests and from guests who are not staying at Borealis Base Camp for this service.
Adriel Butler operates Borealis Base Camp, a lodging, outdoor recreation, and aurora viewing business north of Fairbanks. Butler has applied to the BLM for a special recreation permit to make up to 3 daily round-trip helicopter flights to Tolovana Hot Springs, where the company proposes to set up a hot tub and landing area on a small BLM plot west of existing cabins and tubs long operated by Tolovana Hot Springs Limited.
I know that some people have said we're going to be hovering over top 6 times a day. That's a bit of a fallacy. It's not real.
Butler describes a flight path along a river channel to the west and a short landing and takeoff operation.
In total, you're looking at about 5 to 6 minutes of signature. And it never would be over top of existing tubs.
You add the noise, you add the visual. It's all negative and it's all very impactful.
Tom DeLong is president of Tolovana Hot Springs Limited, which has operated tubs and cabins on land leased from the BLM for nearly 35 years. DeLong does not mince words in describing what he believes the effect of helicopter flights would be.
It's going to ruin the experience. And it's going to probably ruin my business.
DeLong says if the BLM approves the special recreation permit, it could constitute a breach of lease.
Our understanding is that we have the lease for Tolovana Hot Springs and we make the hot springs available to the public. And now we see that they're going to take a tiny sliver from the hot springs area and offer it to someone else.
DeLong adds that he expressed interest in adding the small parcel to Tolovana Limited's lease during a 2020-2021 renewal process, but was discouraged from doing so by the BLM.
Told not to bother about it, that it would really complicate the renewal.
We'll look into it.
BLM outdoor recreation planner Steve Taylor says the lease issue will be among those considered as the agency reviews Borealis Base Camp's special recreation permit application.
We'll do an environmental analysis using the issues that are raised throughout the scoping process and any other issues that we've identified internally.
The BLM is accepting public comments on the permit application until 5 p.m. December 15th. Taylor says a decision on it is expected by late winter. Borealis Base Camp's Butler says if it's approved, he hopes to begin operations next fall. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Petersburg High School has seen an uptick in e-cigarette use, also known as vaping. The school is not alone in this issue. Rates of teen vaping in Alaska are on par with the lower 48. KFSK's Rachel Cassandra reports.
School administrators in Petersburg say that more kids are vaping this year than in years past. Middle and High School Principal Ambler Moss said at a school board meeting there was at least one group of kids vaping in school.
4 students were vaping in the bathroom, but miraculously, because we found no instrument, we just knew it had taken place, we knew these 4 were there.
The school hasn't actually caught many kids vaping, but students have said vaping is going on. Charlotte Martin is 17 and the student rep for the school board. She says vaping isn't widespread, but some kids are vaping during school, probably to seem cool.
It's a little bit like you're trying to look cool. It's maybe something that someone that's a little younger would do to try to fit in with some of the older kids. I think most people would say it's not very cool. It's kind of cringy.
Part of the problem is that it's easy for parents and teachers to miss the signs of vaping entirely. Compared to cigarettes, vaping may have little smell or it may smell like flavorings. Kids might know, but not always the adults. Here's Superintendent Erica Clute Painter.
I think a lot of kids know what things smell like, and then the adults are saying, well, it smells like strawberries, and it's like, well, but that's what it is.
Older vaping devices produced big clouds, but newer ones are more subtle. And people who don't vape might also have trouble recognizing the devices. They can look like flash drives, pens or highlighters, or even makeup. Every year, Petersburg High School students fill out the Alaska Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which is anonymous. According to that survey, vaping rates for local teens are on par with the Southeast region and the state. Erin Michael is the public health nurse for Petersburg and Wrangell.
Petersburg looks at an average about 20.7% have in the last 30 days used electronic vaping products. when the survey was done, and the state is at 21.6. So very similar numbers there.
That means about 1 in 5 high schoolers have vaped in the last month, and almost 45% have tried it. Nicotine is addictive for anyone, but teens are at greater risk. Charlie S. is a wellness coordinator for the Rural Alaska Community Action Program, Rural CAP.
Because the adolescent brain hasn't developed the prefrontal cortex for reasoning quite yet, it's very susceptible to addiction.
They still have quite a bit to learn in their lives, and nicotine really interrupts that process.
That's Christy Knight. She's a program manager for the Alaska Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. She says high amounts of nicotine impairs developing brains.
It impairs their ability to pay attention. It impairs their impulse control and really just is impactful to their ability to learn in a negative way.
Knight says that because vaping is relatively new, we still don't know the long-term health effects, but we do know some of the ingredients people vape.
They may contain ultra-fine particles, and those can be inhaled deep into the lung. Flavorants such as diacetyl, which is a chemical linked to serious lung disease. Volatile organic compounds such as benzene, which is found in car exhaust. And heavy metals such as nickel, tin, and lead.
S. says that the word vape is actually a misnomer. When people use e-cigarettes, they're not inhaling water vapor, but aerosolized chemicals.
If you want a better visual, imagine putting a can of hairspray up to your mouth and giving it a shot like whipped cream.
According to experts, the most concerning part of young people vaping is that it could mean they're dealing with even bigger issues. Samuel Steinbrugge, a social worker and supervisor at Search's Behavioral Clinic in Petersburg, tells me what he worries about when a kid is vaping.
The very first thing that I think about is what else is going on for that kid, because that they're looking for something to help themselves feel better.
And he says we need to view habits like these in the context of cultural and intergenerational trauma.
Structural violence and oppression that lends itself to things like alcoholism and then domestic violence, divorce, substance use.
Teens may also turn to vaping because of stressors around COVID. Steinbrugge says teens go through a developmental phase called individuation, where peer relationships become especially important. COVID lockdowns weakened those peer relationships.
Not having those peer interactions has lent itself to increased rates of depression, increased rates of anxiety.
These are problems that Alaska and the rest of the U.S. is also facing. The upside of that is there are regional, statewide, and national programs to help with this very problem. In Petersburg, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Izzy Ross in Dillingham, Wesley Early in Anchorage, Riley Board in Kenai, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Rachel Cassandra in Petersburg. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Annie Fight produced tonight's show, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.